It's the Agribusiness Report. Our guest today, Joshua Westling with J. Westling and Company. We're talking fertilizer. But before that, let's talk crude oil. And John Kelsey, chairman of America's First Refining.
Ovens are ovens. They turn on, they get hot. If you have a pizza shop, you're going to want a 1,000-degree oven. Well, think of a refinery, you get to set the temperature and leave it. So if I have a heavy crude refinery, I'm making pizza at 1,000 degrees. If I have a bakery that makes cookies, I have an oven that's at 350 degrees. Think of that as a light oil refinery. So our refinery is designed to be at a lower temperature. Well, what that practically means is if I put a cookie in a 1,000-degree oven, it burns up. If I put a pizza in a cookie oven, it never cooks. And that's kind of how the refining business works.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and today our guest is Joshua Westling. Joshua is founder and CEO of J. Westling and Company. Welcome to the show. Okay, little background about you and your pathway, the fact that you're the founder and CEO. I can't wait to hear this. Tell us about your pathway and who J. Westling and Company is.
Well, I'll give you the abbreviated version of that without delving too deeply into everything that I've done. Most recently have actually built one of these fertilizer plants, which, you know, interestingly enough, very few have been built greenfield or from the ground up in the U.S. in the last 30 years, three to be exact. And I was one of those three. Now with the project that I'm working on, that'll be two of four. So team and I are experienced developers, built fertilizer plants, and have been working on the one that we're currently underway with since 2021 and here to help solve some problems.
Well, you've kind of opened the door here to talk a little more about fertilizer production here in the U.S. Can you start us with maybe a brief history of that?
Yeah, I think most of the production in the U.S. was built in the 60s and 70s at the time, primarily along where natural gas, which is a primary feedstock in the production of fertilizer, was located. Before the advent of the pipeline system that we currently enjoy, a lot of natural gas, trapped natural gas, different places around the country. And so different ways to monetize that included fertilizer, which is pretty important for growing all the crops that we grow as a country. And so they built those plants over the top of that. And so that's where most of them are today. Not all of them, but most of them. And serve markets through massive transportation and distribution networks.
You know, we're in a crisis mode, and I say, you already know this, and many producers are already aware of that. And I'm just curious what the factors. I think I know what the factors are here, but how would you describe those?
Yeah, supply demand, right? We learned about it in some class or, you know, as we walk through life. And that's very much where we find ourselves today. And we've been thinking about it and talking about it, obviously having built another one of these for quite some time. And sad to see that some of what we've been talking about is actually playing out in the marketplace today with disruptions that happen all over the world for a variety of reasons that hold our farmers, our grain producers hostage through no making of their own. Fertilizer prices are stratospherically high. And again, that all goes back to supply and demand. We need more production in this country and in specific geographies where those facilities weren't built historically.
Yeah, it didn't happen. We're not in the position we're in because of one thing overnight. This has been over time. But I just wonder, what will it take? I mean, the simple thing is, let's do it domestically. But it's not that simple. What will it take to reduce our dependence on imported fertilizer and get things back on shore, if you will?
Well, you're right in that it's not simple. It's not and complex. It's very complex, which is why so few of them have been built. The need isn't greater today than it was 10 years ago. It isn't greater. I mean, it's grown, but it isn't greater than it has been over a 30-year period of time. But they're hard to build, mostly because they're so capital intensive on the front side of the project, where projects like ours in Gothenburg, a $1.2 billion project, you'll spend $100+ million on engineering on the front side of the project. And so that's kept a lot of these facilities that have been justifiable to have been built in different places from being built. So there's definitely a role for a lot of people to play here to get these things going. And now is the time. Hopefully people see that.
Joshua Westling is with J. Westling and Company on the Agribusiness Report.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Our guest, Joshua Westling, founder, CEO of J. Westling and Company. Okay, Joshua, just curious here. What has the government got wrong and what has the government got right here on fertilizer?
Well, I think the secretaries and the administration in their announcement on the 29th of April, led by Secretary Rollins, is definitely a step in the right direction. It's refreshing to me that they see the problem, that they're thinking through ways to solve the problem, and I think they're on the right track. Of course, they need to start deploying some of the resources that they've suggested in order to make what they want to come to fruition. But it's a step in the right direction for sure. And then there's some legislation, bipartisan legislation, at both the Senate and the House, that are definitely steps in the right direction as well in getting the government involved in solving the problem. And I'm sure, to the extent that any of your listeners or viewers are inclined, calling their representatives and pointing out to them that they're heading in the right direction and to get this stuff passed would be very helpful.
So we talk about things require, this is going to take an act of Congress. And really at this point, You need an act of Congress. I'm also kind of wondering in the back of my mind, it is one thing to get help from an administration, but anytime you have a change in administrations, you can throw out nearly everything that you had been planning on. Is that part of the challenge moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly can be part of the challenge, right? But this should transcend administrations. This should transcend political parties. You know, a fact that I like to point out to people, our Earth's population is, a little over 8 billion now, I think, as I recall. Only 4 billion or so people could eat without nitrogen fertilizer. So everyone should care about that, right? You've heard the adage, food security is national security. Again, that should transcend administrations. This administration is locked in on it and they're moving to solve it. But even if the administration were to change, again, folks should still care about feeding our population.
All right. I found right over here in the corner a magic wand. So, Joshua, I'm giving you this magic wand to wave. Maybe this is a good way to kind of break it down to its simplest form. What steps do we need to be taking as a nation so that we get out of this and we don't fall back into it?
These facilities aren't like Walgreens, right? We can't put one on every corner. There's no need to put one on every corner, but there are some strategic locations that are primarily challenged by transportation, distribution, logistics. It's rail, it's barge, it's truck. However it's getting to people, there are places where it's just inherently difficult for that to happen. Yet they grow a lot of crops in those places, and so they need it. It's not a discretionary item. It's a staple. And so we have to find a way to get it to people. And rather than, you know, try to build more highways or build more rail, all of those are complex as well. I think we should build the stuff where they use the stuff, which is to say put fertilizer plants where they're growing a lot of row crops. And, you know, the magic wand, if I'm waving a magic wand, as I mentioned earlier, the upfront cost is a real thing. Nevertheless, it's hard to get folks to fund into that in the private sector because the check is so big, the ask, the lift is so heavy that it's the private sector just has a hard time with it. And so getting the government to come in the form of you know, a grant or some form of bridge capital to get it started and heading down the road to the point where then you can layer in the private capital, I think that's where there's an opportunity here. And that's, I'm hopeful that the administration and the bipartisan work being done in the Senate and the House bring to reality.
I know you mentioned one thing we can do is to talk to our representatives, our congressmen, senators, and pass this on. But specifically, is there someplace we could go that kind of outlines maybe some of the talking points? Maybe we don't even know what to say when we call one of our members of Congress. Any words of advice there?
Yeah, I think you should voice support for the framework that was outlined by Secretary Rollins on the 29th of April. Again, I think it's a step in the right direction with absolute certainty. There's the Bipartisan Homegrown Fertilizer Act, I think you could reference as well. I think there is a lot within that that is also important and helpful in getting these things built. And then there's some additional transparency legislation that's also moving forward to give farmers visibility into what's creating these pricing dynamics. And knowledge is power, right? So having that and having it available to producers so they can at least understand what's happening and why, also important. So any one of those, I think you could reference and should reference when you're reaching out to your representatives. And they've been hearing from folks, you know, they know the input prices are historically high. They know it's a problem. They know it's causing issues at the farm level. And so calling and saying, I absolutely have these issues. Hopefully you guys can figure out a way to solve them. And here are some examples, some concrete real world examples of what's happening in the halls of Congress that you guys, Congress people, representatives can latch on to win the day.
What a great conversation. Thanks for carving out time to visit with you. We wish you the best. Again, it's Joshua Westling, founder, CEO of J. Westling and Company. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. We've been talking fertilizer with Joshua Westling of J. Westling and Company, outlining what's government got wrong, what have they got right, how do we fix our current situation, the reliance on foreign fertilizer. Again, Joshua Westling with J. Westling and Company. I'm Tony St. James. This is the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. John Calci, CEO and Chairman of America's First Refining.
Brownsville is a deep water port on the southern tip of Texas. It's on the border of Mexico. It's the last non-industrial port on the Gulf Coast. And for us, it presented a unique opportunity because part of the challenge is when you're permitting a refinery like ours, a large industrial space, the background emissions in the area play a big role in what you can permit and where you can permit it. So, for example, the typical refining centers of South Louisiana or Houston or Corpus Christi are already maxed out in what they can do in terms of large industry. So Brownsville was a unique opportunity for us, and it was a place where you could permit something like this, and it was adjacent to a market being Mexico, as well as the U.S. Gulf Coast market, and it's on deep water so we can access the world or other parts of the U.S.
It's the Agribusiness Report.